The front page of our congregation's website says in big bold letters right at the top, "Come and see." Those are Jesus' words, you know. At the start of John's gospel, Jesus is walking by the sea and a couple of fishermen ask where he's staying. "Come and see," he responds. It's this lovely, generous, gentle invitation, wide open and clear. Later in that same gospel, he says in a similar vein, "Anyone who comes to me, I will never drive away." This is Jesus at his most warm and welcoming. And it's generally how I tend to think of him and the way he interacted with people. The Gospels are full of these kinds of stories, right? Of all sorts of folks, often those with nowhere else to go, seeking out Jesus's company and Jesus responding with openness and grace. You're burdened with guilt or sickness. You're left behind by your neighbors. You're ignored by your society. You are unsatisfied with the answers life has given you so far. Well, tag along with us. There's always room for one more. That's how I like to think of Jesus most of the time. And I think it's the sort of spirit that we hope to set in our community, extending hospitality and this spacious welcome to all. Come and see. Those are Jesus' words, but not from that reading we just heard tonight. I don't know what the opposite of an invitation is exactly, but that's what Jesus seems to be offering here. Large crowds are traveling with him, and he turns around to describe just who cannot be a disciple. And as you heard, he casts a pretty wide net. Whoever does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, even life itself. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow. Whoever does not give up all that they own. None of these can be my disciple, Jesus says. So Luke doesn't tell us just what happened right after Jesus let this anti-invitation fly, but I have to imagine the crowds getting pretty quiet. "He always seemed like such a nice guy," I imagine one person whispering. "I thought he wanted us to join him," says another. "I am done," says a third. "I was happy to come and see for a while, but I think I've seen enough. I'm going back home." Jesus' words here are difficult, demanding, and uncomfortable. They're hard to understand alongside the bulk of his teaching, teaching that focuses on grace, love, acceptance. And frankly, they do seem more designed to drive people away than to gather them in. There's a reason we don't have "None of you can become my disciples if you don't give up all your possessions" right at the top of our website. Might be an interesting experiment though, huh? Those are hard words, and yet they are Jesus' words. As puzzling and uncomfortable as they might be, they are ours to wrestle with. So how might they address us tonight? A little context might help. It's easy to skim over that word disciple when it shows up in the Gospels, I think. I mean, it's just basically another word for a Christian, right? Well, sort of. A disciple is literally a student. That's what the word means at its root. We might think of a student today as someone who goes to school regularly or takes weekly violin lessons, but the connotation in Jesus' day is very different. To be someone's disciple in the ancient world was not like a once a week for an hour or two kind of activity. To become the disciple of a teacher or a philosopher meant you physically followed that person around, basically around the clock, watching what the teacher did and listening to what the teacher said. You tried to soak up and learn as much as you possibly could because you believed this teacher had something profound to offer, a new way of looking at things, a sort of wisdom that you couldn't just arrive at on your own. It wasn't so much one activity you engaged in alongside another number of others. It was far more drastic than that, like taking on a new identity that took precedence over others in your life. Maybe it's a little like the sort of change that happens in a person's life when she or he becomes a parent. This business of caring for an infant is not just a new hobby, something you do with free time that you can find. That baby in your arms reorders your life. You spend your time differently. You look at the world differently. Your priorities shift. Your patterns change. You take on a new identity. Something of who you are changes. I think discipleship, as Jesus speaks about it, is a bit like this. As Jesus went around calling disciples or students, he was calling them to reorder their lives. If they were going to tromp off into the unknown with him, priorities were going to need to shift. Loyalties that had always seemed paramount would need to be reevaluated. New levels of risk and uncertainty and danger would need to be accepted. He made it abundantly clear to those around him that being a disciple was not one hobby to fit alongside others. It was a new identity. I think you probably couldn't miss this character of life with Jesus in the first century. Jesus was on the move, and if you were going to keep up with him for any length of time, your life was going to be turned upside down. It's certainly at least part of why so few were finally there with him at the end. You couldn't miss it back then, but of course, we can miss it now. All these centuries later, Christian faith easily becomes compartmentalized, a tame and relatively undemanding undertaking, something that slides in comfortably wherever it fits in our lives, rather than something that gives them a new shape altogether. So Jesus speaks in this prickly, uncomfortable way to remind us all these centuries later that that's not actually how being his disciple works. Being with him will shift your habitual ways of relating to others, he says. That does seem to be closer to the sense of his words about hating family and life itself. In Jesus' language and culture, this jarring terminology was often used to describe valuing one thing far above another. Being with him will bring you into places you might never have thought to go and lead you to carry burdens you would never have chosen if simply left to your own devices. Being with him will call into question your relationship to possessions, asking you to reevaluate what you truly need, what you might share, what you might release. Rowan Williams puts it simply and powerfully. Being with Jesus is recognizing that who you are is finally going to be determined by your relationship with him. Being Jesus' disciple means that nothing and no one else gets to take that place in our lives. So much in our world feels hard and uncertain and shaky right now. So I think we might be particularly drawn to the Jesus who simply says, "Come and see," to the one who's all comfort and open arms. I am certainly drawn there. And of course, Jesus does still come to us in that gentle, gracious way. But I'm convinced that we also need words reminding us of the cost of following, of the all-encompassing task of being a disciple or a student of Jesus. And we need these words now as much as ever, because it's in leaving our familiar ground that we find the real gifts in Jesus' company. It's in leaving behind our fears and our limited imagination and our poor sense of what's possible and our old self-centered habits and patterns. It's in leaving all of that that we might discover the more abundant and free life Jesus offers us. The witness of so many faithful points us this way. The invitation is there again today, friends, to join in this costly following. It will ask much, but in the asking there is life to be found. So we come, ready to pay attention to Jesus, to listen to him, and to go where he goes, ready to take another step in his company. Thanks be to God. Amen.